We are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. Today we are in Reggio Emilia.
Cozze ci tene, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora. Cozze ci tene, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
Well, cheers then, Daniel.
Cheers, Lionel.
Another day.
Buonasera a tutti.
On the Giro d'Italia, ticked off Giro style, stage 12.
Giro wanted to come on the podcast tonight to make us an announcement about his future in cycling journalism, but we've kind of barred him tonight because I think it might get out of hand. He was in slightly delirious form, delirious mood earlier, and he was also smarting slightly from a conversation he'd had with his shadow, as he calls him, Vincenzo Nibali, this morning. Nibali was not very happy with La Gazzetta's headline yesterday. And Ciro's explained to Nibali on numerous occasions, as we all have to riders on occasions, that generally the journalists don't come up with the headlines.
Well, always the journalists don't come up with the headline,
well,
really, do they?
And anyway, the headline was something to the effect of Nibali, he was critical of Quintana, that Quintana didn't attack yesterday. What Nibali actually said was he thought that Quintana might attack yesterday, and he didn't, but he didn't suggest that he should have attacked. Anyway, so there was a bit of a discussion between Ciro and Nibali this morning, but they're still best of friends.
Well, that's a relief. Well, we're
not great for objectivity, but
we're in Reggio Emilia, aren't we? A little bit blustery. We're on quite a busy road here, just outside a bar. Still quite warm, although chillying over a bit now. We're in the shade. But we started the day, stage 12 of the Giro, in Forlì, which was the hometown of AG2R La Mondiale's Matteo Monteguti, and a big crowd around his bus today. And we kind of passed so many famous things today, didn't we, Daniel? We passed, drove past Bologna, the home of Bolognese sauce. No?
Bolognese sauce isn't really a thing, though.
Ragu.
Yeah.
Is it not? Does it not originate from?
They
Italians don't
Bolognese
call it
in front of an Italian. You'll be exiled.
It's fine. There's not many of them about. So we also passed Modena, the home of balsamic vinegar, and Maserati, of course. Our car was feeling very much at home there. We drove past the Mapei Stadium, which is home to Sassuolo Football Club and Reggiana Football Club.
Drove past the Mercatone Uno headquarters.
Did we? I missed that. I saw a big supermarket. I thought
I told you were sleeping. I pointed it out.
Well, anyway, the Mapei Stadium, of course, anyone who was following cycling in the 1990s and early 2000s will know that Mapei, the company, sponsored basically the biggest team in the world at the time. And now we are in Reggio Emilia, the hometown of Mirko Maestri of Bardiani, who spent most of the day in the break, as well as Parmesan cheese. We'll be hearing a little bit about Parmigiano later on in the episode.
And the home of, or for most of his life, for Eugut Zupa, who represents Albania as the Albanian champion, rides for Vidya Triestina, was on the attack in the finale. He spent most of his formative years in Reggio Emilia. And also, Lionel, one final thing. The Italian flag was also born in Reggio Emilia in... it was only adopted in the 1940s, would you believe? But I think tomorrow's stage starts under the building where it was first conceived.
Wow. I have noticed quite a few of the Italian tricolours around actually today, more so than I've noticed in the rest of the race. Past us now comes an ambulance or a police car or something.
What I've just said was an absolute nonsense. It was adopted formally, the current Italian flag was adopted formally in the 1940s, but I think the flag I'm referring to that was conceived in Reggio Emilia was designed or first saw the light of day in the 18th century.
Right. We're off to a flyer, aren't we, with my Bolognese beef. It is, isn't it? Well, it's been one of those days, hasn't it? I asked you, Daniel, whether the Italians have a phrase for jour sans, the French phrase for a nothing day or an empty day, a day without. And you said there isn't quite the same.
No, giornata no is a pretty good translation.
Well, it was a quiet day on the race. Marco Maccato of UAE Emirates, Sergei Fursunov of Gazprom, and as mentioned earlier, Mirko Maestri of Bardiani. With the three riders, Maestri got across to the other two. They were the break for almost all of the day. Maestri was left on his own. with 12 kilometres to go and survived until about 7 to go. As you mentioned, Daniel, Eugène Zuppa of Willia had a crack in the last couple of kilometres, but the victory went to Fernando Gaviria, his third stage win of the Giro, his first Grand Tour, three stage wins, and as I'll explain in a minute, he's virtually got the Ciclamino jersey wrapped up as long as he can make it through the mountains. Jakub Marečko of Willia was second, Ireland Sam Bennett of Bora was third, another third place for him. On the GC, a little bit of movement because Adam Yates and Domenico Pozzovivo both gained 6 seconds because there was a little bit of a split, and Pozzovivo's moved up from 9th to 8th. Geraint Thomas lost a bit of time as well, 31 seconds. Omar Frehley won 4 points out on the road on the first two climbs, or the only two climbs, so he now has the blue jersey ahead of Jan Palanch as king of the mountains. Gaviria is in Ciclamino and Bob Jungels is in white, but for Quickstep Floors it worked out perfectly for them in the end, and the other big two sprinters in the race, Andre Greipel and Caleb Ewan, were really nowhere in relation.
Well, Ewan actually had a problem with a kilometre to go. I think he hit another rider and his brake pad was rubbing on his rim, and that prevented him from sprinting in any reasonable fashion. Gaviria has got a real swagger about him now. He has always been a confident young man, but the way he sprinted today and the way he sort of strolled into the press room, sidled into the press room, I don't know if you've ever seen, how many of the listeners would have seen Blackadder goes forward. It was like Lord Flashheart or Captain Flashheart.
Well, I was going to say,
real swagger about him.
A sort of Latin Mark Cavendish about him, isn't there?
There is. And he's warming to the task here. I think a couple of people made the point after the finish today that he's a rider who struggles less than other sprinters on the climbs, and probably struggled less than a lot of the sprinters yesterday, and consequently may have been a little bit fresher. Yesterday was a tough stage, it was hot, it was hilly, and that was certainly a point I think Davide Martinelli, one of the Quickstep lead out train, made this evening. And another opportunity for all the sprinters tomorrow, last opportunity. Greipel will be desperate to win. A few riders who will have mixed feelings about their Giro so far, a few of the sprinters. Sam Bennett, in fact, should we hear from Sam Bennett? He was talking to a friend of the podcast, Rob Hales, who's working for Eurosport here. Here's a quick blast of a very downbeat Sam Bennett.
It was a long day. I just want to thank the guys for the support today. They did another fantastic job, and I made a slight mistake in the final. Just wasn't expecting Quickstep to come from behind like that, and went on the wrong side of Rudy for starters, and I just couldn't make the right call in that second, and cost me top result again. But now I'll really happy with the trust the team is putting in me, and I'd like to thank them for the amazing support. We'll try again tomorrow, but you know, sorry for being really down about it, but you know, we came here to try and get result, like try and get wins, and when the team is doing a fantastic job, I just feel like I'm letting them down.
Well, Sam Bennett being a little bit harsh on himself there, being very close, but
been a lot of that, riders being harsh on themselves. Do you see our friend Andy Hood's interview with TJ Van Garderen, TJ Van Garderen was sort of echoing some of what we were saying about TJ Van Garderen a couple of days ago, that he seemed to be carrying the weight of the world on his shoulders and was probably giving himself too much of a hard time. And Sam Bennett, you know, is also quite down on himself. I think that obviously the pressure is so great when you see your teammates doing such a good job for you, and Sam Bennett's come into this Giro, he's never really been in this position before in a Grand Tour, when he's got a whole very powerful, very impressive team at his disposal in the sprints, and you know, he's got very close but has not managed to pull off a win yet.
Well, and he's up against it with Gaviria in such great form, isn't he? And Quickstep Floors, although it's not their A team, is it? It's a kind of B plus team here at the Giro, but they've got these sprints.
B Duplus.
Yeah, I had a quick chat with Laurence Duplus, one of their lead out men at the finish, and he explained to me that they feel that the Ciclamino jersey is wrapped up for Gaviria, and I wondered whether, you know, there's so much climbing still to come, whether any of the GC riders might gather enough points to be a threat. But doing a little bit of maths, I've totted up that there's only actually 135 points available from Saturday to the end of the race. Gaviria is already on 247, so he can't be caught by the likes of Nibali, Quintana, Dumoulin, the two far behind, because of the way the points have been weighted towards the sprinters. Because remember the year when Mark Cavendish lost out right at the death, having won a host of stages. But I can't remember who was it was Joaquim Rodriguez, wasn't it, who pipped him, because the points on the mountain stages were roughly equal. There's quite a big difference between the flat stages and the mountain stages. So Gaviria's 80-point lead over Jasper Stuyven is likely to be more than enough, as long as he can finish all of the mountain stages and reach Milan. And really, that's quite an extraordinary achievement. First Grand Tour for Gaviria, 22 years old. Three stage wins, possibly a fourth tomorrow. That's a real announcement, isn't it?
Boom, or woof, as Lord Flashheart.
Hi, I'm Lara. I've worked at Rafa for about 6 months, and my job is pro teams marketing, so working with all our teams and athletes. Since joining, the amount that I've been on my bike and the confidence I've had to get on my bike has been fostered by the people here. There's always somebody better than you. And it sounds like it could be discouraging, but it's not. It really fosters this feeling that you can take on anything. And it's just this community of people that make you feel that you can achieve pretty much anything you put your mind to.
The Rafa Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. If you are in Italy and you can get to Milan this weekend, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, there are some rides going out to celebrate the 100th edition of the Corsa Rosa. These rides have been curated by local riders and they'll showcase some of the best riding around Milan. If you want to go, sign up at rafa.cc/rides/Milan. The Rafa Milan pop-up store is open from the 4th of May to the 27th of June, and it's on Via Fiori Chiari. So if you know Milan, you'll know where that is. Also, we have the weekly award of the Rafa Pedaleur de Charme Prize. And as last week, this will be voted by the listeners on Twitter. We'll have a Twitter poll open by the time you listen to this. And we have four riders to choose from. And those four riders are Geraint Thomas for dealing with adversity in such a charming and level-headed and very pleasant way, when really no one could expect such a response from him. Adam Hansen for handing a bottle to some fans during his time trial effort a couple of days ago. Omar Frehley, just for being Omar Frehley. And Victor Campenaerts. And this story we'll probably talk about in a bit more detail if Campenaerts wins. But he secured himself a date by unzipping his Belgian champion skin suit in the time trial to reveal a request to a young lady that he would like to ask out on a date, and she said yes.
Didn't he also secure himself a fine?
He did. He got fined 100 Swiss francs by the humourless UCI for bringing the sport into disrepute. Works out at about £78. Not quite sure what that is in euros, probably about €78. So yes, already turned out to be quite a costly date, but hopefully he's going to spend a bit more than that on a good meal for two and some nice wine.
Some other business to clean up, Lionel, from the last few days. Yesterday, we praised Movistar for having gained some time with Andre Amador, having moved him up the general classification. We thought that was a smart move, that they were setting him up to be a sort of counterpuncher in the mountains. Bit of disagreement about that. Bit of disagreement, Lionel. Stefano Zanata, the direct sportive of the Bardiani team, who were on home turf today, it was a big stage for them today, and they were desperate to get Maestri in the break, and they did. But he said that Movistar rode like amateurs yesterday. In fact, here is what Stefano Zanata told me at the start today in Forlì. I'm more and more surprised by how some of the teams who are here to win the Giro are riding. They think that they can make life hard for a leader on the day after a time trial on a relatively easy course when he's got a team built to keep the race under control or keep a group close. Yesterday, I think Movistar should have left teams with no GC ambitions to have their day, maybe make a few friends for later on. That was the way to ride. You say they tied out Sunweb, but they also tied out themselves. And for what? Nothing. They achieved nothing. Amador gained a minute, but I think they're here to win the Giro with Quintana, aren't they? They could have gone for another stage win with Rojas or Izaguirre, instead of burning matches to take a group of 30 down the road. There were also a lot of other good riders among those 30. GC riders, quality riders.
Far be it for me to say that I know more about cycling than a director sportif, but The director sportif of Bardiani having a pop at Movistar. Not sure. That's a bit like the Watford manager having a go at Real Madrid, isn't it?
It did sound a little bit like Zanata was mainly aggrieved that they didn't let Bardiani win the stage.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it's all about making friends and influencing people, isn't it, I suppose? And Movistar made it hard for Sunweb, didn't they? And that may well be all they were trying to do. You know, it's a war of attrition at the end of the day.
Yeah, it is. And Zanata made the point there that they also made it hard for themselves. But you would think that Movistar are maybe slightly better equipped to absorb the exertions of yesterday than
they're
Sunweb.
Pretty good at cycling, aren't they?
They're not bad at cycling. Talking of people who may or may not be good at cycling, Filippo Pozzato has been in the news again, mainly because we've put him there, mainly solely down to us. The inspiration for us to actually go in search of the peacock of San Diego this morning was something we saw yesterday. We mentioned yesterday Lucas Shinto, who I think listeners are starting to get to know, that the Python, his nickname is the Python, so you've got the Python and the Peacock on that team. He is a very colourful character, and you know, he threatened to send his riders home, or he wanted to send his riders home early in the Giro, and then yesterday he was remonstrating with one of the Spanish riders on the team, Amezcueta. We weren't quite sure what it was all about. So I went to find Shinto today. The other day he talked to me about doing a Shinto. So this is an Italian phrase that he's come up with, fare una Shintata. And he's very proud of the fact that he's done a lot of Shintata in this Giro, which basically means say something ridiculous. Anyway, let's see how ridiculous on the Shinto meter what he said this morning was.
I was telling him to wait for Marechko. 3-4 of our riders had already sat up. I'd worked out that the time limit wasn't going to be a problem, but the point was that a rider who sees the whole team or half of the team waiting for him gets a big boost to his morale. He also feels a sense of responsibility. Amezcueta was thinking, this rider's already sat up, this rider's already sat up, and so he pretended he couldn't hear the instructions on the radio. Sometimes I suppose I have to realise that the television cameras are on us because, well, we're at the Giro d'Italia. All I was doing was telling him, in a nice way, that he needed to sit up. I just said, stop, stop now. I wasn't angry. You know, they've got to be men and they have to be professional. If you don't teach young riders how to be professional, they'll be out of the sport after a year in a World Tour team. How many times did I sacrifice myself as a young rider, in teams with Bugno, for example? One year at the Tirreno Adriatico, there were 30 of us in the lead group, 30 kilometres from the finish, and Rolf Sorensen rides alongside me and tells me to take his helmet back to the team car. I'm thinking, team car? The team car's a minute and a half behind us and we're 30 kilometres from the finish. But I kept silent, stuck his helmet under my jersey and went back to the team car. And he won the stage. It's normal to learn how to be a pro and how to be a good teammate.
Well, I think that was only about a 7.5 on the Shintometer. We'll call it the Shintometer.
It wasn't, and he's kind of vindicated because Marechko finished second today. So perhaps Amezcueta's help did bear fruit, and Marechko was slightly fresher today because he had more teammates. Anyway, it's fairly well known in Italian cycling that Pozzato and Shinto aren't getting on particularly well. Pozzato, I asked to speak to him this morning, and he summoned me onto the bus, onto the Villa Triestina bus. Highly unusual practice, this, to summon a journalist onto the bus. Anyway, I asked him whether Shinto's tactic... Shinto announced to us a few days ago that he was his Shintate were designed to make his riders angry, and that he hoped that by being angry they would perform better on the road. And I asked Pozzato whether Shinto was succeeding in getting them angry, and here is what he said.
Shinto says he's trying to make us angry. Well, he's succeeding. I mean, well, we've been in nearly every one of the 11 breaks, so he must be right. It must be a good technique.
Well, Lionel, you could hear the sarcasm dripping down the steps of the Villa Triestina team bus, couldn't you? Pozzato and Shinto, on the basis of that clip, are not getting on very well.
Yeah, the Pozzometer there is on about 11. It's interesting though, isn't it? Because the Giro, I was thinking about this today, what makes the Giro so different to the Tour, it's the Italian flavour, and it has a much stronger Italian flavour than the Tour de France has. The the Tour de France's French flavour has really been watered down by the kind of the internationalisation. And it's funny that some of the things the Giro have been doing seems to be steering it in the same direction. But one of the big problems the race has had this year is that the Italian wildcard teams are just not creating the stories that they have done over the last 15, 20 years. And you've made the point, Daniel, about the amount of airtime that Pozzato is getting on Italian TV, but there's a vacuum there, isn't there?
Well, Lionel, I happened to ask him about that, and here's what he said. Maybe they need to learn how to communicate so that they get invited too. So there you go. Filippo Pozzato thinks that the other wildcard teams or the other domestic Italian teams need to communicate better, need to get their face on TV a bit more.
Well, it says it all, doesn't it? If you can't be good, be charismatic. And if you can't be charismatic, you better be good.
Ciro did say something very funny about Pozzato earlier today. Ciro is very sceptical about whether Pozzato is going to make it to Milan because he's not going particularly well. He's suffering a little bit. Ciro said that Pozzato is always specialised in the fourth week anyway, and he's always the favourite for stage 22 anyway. So
surely he'll be off on a shopping trip. Although the problem is we're so close to Milan now anyway, there's plenty of opportunities for a shortcut, isn't there? Well, talking of men with a taste for flash cars, or impressive cars, or supercars, you took Mark Cavendish for a spin in the Maserati Quattroporte that we've been driving around Italy yesterday, didn't you?
I did. I happened upon him away from a stray on the streets of Florence yesterday, and I took pity on him. And I offered him a ride from in the centre of Florence to the start yesterday.
Well, we'll listen to that, but I do also know that if Maserati are listening, which they undoubtedly are, Mark Cavendish wouldn't be unhappy at driving a Maserati, would he?
I don't think he would.
The Cycling Podcast on the road at the Giro d'Italia with Maserati.
Bum. Bye, Mark. Didn't fancy letting you drive. I've been through that ordeal once before, but good to see you. Good to see you at the Giro. And what are you doing here?
Just come and have a look. I only live 25k away. The Piazzale Michelangelo is an incredible view of Florence. Did you get to see it? Should bring your girlfriend up here.
How's the training going? Because we know that you've been sick. You've been suffering with this Epstein-Barr virus. How are you?
Obviously, I'm riding my bike. Thanks for asking how I am. I'm all right. Feel all right. Some days I'm tired. Some days I feel on top of the world. That's the thing about this virus is that you just don't know. Could be gone in a week more. Could be a year. Don't really know. Just got to take it as it comes every day. As long as I'm riding my bike, I'm okay. You know, well, I've got no definitive date on when I'll be better. You know, let alone when I'll be racing.
And the morale's been all right, or has it been a bit difficult to sit out the last few weeks?
It's been difficult, especially with two beautiful races going on. Obviously, the Giro's looked incredible on television. That's why I couldn't miss it when I was here. And then California looks good, and to see that stage in Sacramento that I normally win. Won by someone else, that was hard. So, kind of missing the race, and I'm missing seeing my mates, you know, my teammates and that. But, well, it is what it is. I just got to get over it and try and get better. So.
Been watching Giro?
I have, yeah. First day, I watch the first day, then obviously get the ump because you're not sprinting, so I don't watch it, and then kind of get withdrawals and start watching it again. I was going to forget around the other day when he crashed, devastated, I know. For everything in this race, but he did a good ride yesterday. Obviously, to even come that close to Dimoulin is impressive because Dimoulin was on absolute fire yesterday. So, but it looked nice. Looks nice on TV. That's hot for all the race.
And the sprinters. I mean, it's been a big race for Gaviria, big race for you, and no one's really quite sure at the moment who's going to turn out to be, well, maybe even your sort of heir of those two. You got a view on who's sort of the bigger threat to you at the moment?
They're different. Probably Caleb. Caleb's probably the one that beat me more, but I think Gaviria's the one that's going to win more bike races, more kind of versatile. You know, they're different. It's like when people compare me and Sagan, won't be the same kind of rider. I think it's the same with them two. They're both going to win, and they're both the future of bike riding, I think. Gaviria a bit more all-rounded, and Caleb's going to be the future sprinting as a whole.
talk to me a bit about Tuscany. So you live up the road in Quarrata, sort of 40 kilometres from here. Did you fall in love with Tuscany straight away? Was it love at first sight?
Mate, in less than a week. I come here to train. Oh, what did I do? Oh, no, come here, I rode GB Industrial El Mar. I was living in Germany at the time, at Spark. I had to come here to train with the national team. Did that one race, and then we did the Baby Giro, but I got sick even before the prologue. So I just stayed here with Dave Miller, actually. He was out staying with Max Yandri, so I stayed with that here as well with Max and trained with David. And yeah, within a week, I was like, whoa, we're in love with it. Soon after, got an apartment and I've been here since, really.
So. And for those who don't know it, and if you had to sort of do a quick advert for Tuscany, what is it that makes it so special?
What you see on a postcard, it really is that. I think for a bike rider especially, it's incredible life. Food's great, weather's great. There's three airports close by, Florence, Pisa, Bologna. The roads, even the people here, the roads, okay, you've got mountains, big mountains. You got small mountains if you're going to Chianti. You got the big mountains of the Apennine, the Pennines, and small mountains over in Chianti, or you got the glacial basin of Florence, which is flat, so you got anything you want for training. And the people here, they grow up with cycling, they love cycling. Mm. So as much as you can be safe on Italian roads, like...
Not great, are they, at the moment, Italian roads? Like, they've deteriorated. We've noticed on the Giro how much the roads in the south...
Yeah, but they're like that in England, honestly, like... Mm. Actually, I have worse arms after a ride home in the UK than I do here in Italy, to be fair.
Mm-hmm. How's your Italian?
Ma meglio sempre, sì. Un prato.
Very good, mate. Well, don't know what you think of my driving. Want to give it a mark out of 10?
You're a hesitator, aren't you? You love a hesitation. You're one of them people who come to... You like a like roundabout standoff a bit, don't you?
Based on very little evidence, this mark. This is just a...
I reckon you go on a roundabout and wait for the next person to go, whoever it is. Like, you're never the one to commit.
All right, well, I think I'm going to drop you off now because I don't want any more insults. What do you think of the car?
That's real nice. No, they're nice in Maserati, eh? This is Quattro Porte.
Yeah. Bit of a mess in the back. Don't look back there.
That's nice.
Thanks very much, Mark. Catch you down the road.
The Cycling Podcast, on the road at the Giro d'Italia with Maserati. Visit maserati.co.uk to find out more about the new Levante, the Maserati of SUVs. Yours from £56,250 on the road. You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. Science in Sport and Team Sky have teamed up to give away an incredible prize bundle worth £5,000. The first place winner will receive a pair of Oakley Giro sunglasses that you can't buy anywhere. They're only worn by professional riders. And a best-in-market smart trainer, the Wahoo Kicker, plus a year's supply of Science in Sport and Muckoff products, and a signed Team Sky 2017 jersey. That's quite a bundle of prizes. There are also second and third place prizes worth £1,000 and £500 up for grabs. If you want to enter that competition, go to www.scienceinsport.com/thecyclingpodcast.
Lionel, we're in Reggio. I saw you there. I spotted you tasting one of the local specialities, something that people associate with this region of the world. Parmigiano, Parmesan cheese, is as it's known in English.
I'm wondering if one of these giant wheels would just roll down the stairs and into the boot of our car.
It might do. Well, luckily, we're joined by an expert. Tommaso, you work for Parmigiano Reggiano. You're here serving cheese, promoting Parmigiano Reggiano. Most people in England don't even know that Parmigiano Reggiano comes from this part of Italy, but it's a very small and specific part of Italy, isn't it?
So, we have a restricted production area that includes the province of Reggio Emilia, a small part of Mantova and Bologna province, all the province of Parma and Modena. Only in this area you can produce Parmigiano Reggiano in all the Italy and also in all the world. Parmigiano is a DOP product that corresponds to the PDO, so Protected Designation of Origin. You have you must have a restricted production area, and we decide to create this small area because this area have special characteristic. A special characteristic in the weather, in the grass that we give to the cows, the cow transform the milk and the milk become cheese, so give to the cheese is different characteristic.
So how old are these? How long have they been maturing?
The best age for the cheese is between 24 and 30 months. Is the age where the Parmigiano Reggiano give his best characteristics.
Do people in this region, Tommaso, buy? Would someone typically have? What do you call? There's a specific name. It's a forma, no?
Forma, exactly.
Would they buy those and have one at home? Or
yeah, if you want, you can roll it home. There's no problem. So it's heavy. It weighs more than 40 kilos. So to bring it home, it's hard. It's hard. But here in our production area, there are a lot of people that buy one wheel and divided it at home in the family. So we use a lot, and it's also cheaper to buy one.
Daniel, it strikes me that in a 40-mile radius, we can have balsamic vinegar, Parma ham, and Parmesan. I mean, we've got our own antipasti before we even start dinner.
Heaven for you, isn't it, Lionel? Heaven.
So Lionel, you enjoyed that Parmesan, didn't you? I thought that you were, we should have asked about the rules of Parmigiano, because there are rules. There are rules. This is going to shock you, because I know it's most unusual for the Italians to have very, very strict and draconian rules about how you eat their food. But Parmigiano, for example, if you try to ask for Parmigiano on an arrabbiata, a spicy sauce, they will kick you out of the restaurant.
So what should you have on an arrabbiata then?
Pecorino.
Ah, interesting. Okay. Can you have Parmesan cheese on toast?
Oh no, can we move on, please?
It was very nice though. I mean, it's fantastic stuff, and I would definitely wheel one of their huge wheels of cheese if I could just fit it into the boot of the Maserati. Unfortunately, it's full with all of our luggage, isn't it? But yeah, fantastic tasting stuff. We're back here tomorrow morning, aren't we, Reggio Emilia? The Giro kind of all joined up after sort of hot-footing it up from the south. It now concentrates itself up in the north for, well, the remainder of the race.
Yeah, it's getting slightly more relaxed for us. Tom Dumoulin is perhaps not feeling as relaxed as he was yesterday because he didn't want to do a press conference tonight. He opted out of his press conference, wanting to maximise the time he gets to rest and recuperate. So, interesting over the last few hours just to, get more opinions about how far Dumoulin is going to go in this Giro, whether he is a credible contender, a credible option for the overall victory in Milan. Mikel Landa of Team Sky, he thinks not. He thinks it's going to be between Nibali and Quintana. Had a quick chat with Paolo Longo, the Bahrain Merida coach, Nibali's coach this morning. He said that Nibali's riding a good Giro. They're very happy, but he also came into form a lot earlier this year. He also designed his training, tailored his training to come into form earlier in the Giro this year. So, it's not a foregone conclusion by any means that he's going to improve in the same way that he did in last year's Giro.
Well, last year he left it very late, didn't he? But he did gain, 5 minutes in a couple of days. I mean, he really hacked chunks out of the riders that were ahead of him. He looked dead and buried, didn't he, with a week to go. And then suddenly it was all in his hands. And he's in a much better position now than he was at the same stage of last year's race.
He is, Lionel. We talked yesterday at length about Sunweb, and we talked about the strength of their team here, or how much they may have suffered yesterday. And Laurens ten Dam, we heard from him yesterday, didn't we, about the advice that he's been giving Tom Dumoulin over the years. We promised that we'd hear the second installment of my interview with Tom Dumoulin from Laurens ten Dam from a few days ago. And here he is. This is a very interesting comparison, I thought, by Laurens ten Dam of the three Dutchies, the three big Dutch names in this Giro. So that's Tom Dumoulin, Steven Kruiswijk and Bauke Mollema, all of whom have been teammates of Laurens ten Dam over the past few years.
Yeah, so obviously I was with Bauke a lot, at the Rabobank Belgium years, and he was always my leader, but he let me free a lot, and he is I could do also my own GCs there. I still have to be thankful for him, because there are a lot of leaders who keep their domestics with them, and I was allowed like a free leash sometimes. So that was nice, and he's very on his own, and he's never excited about something. He goes in the bus, reads his books, and he doesn't waste any energy. And Tom is more involved with the whole team, in contrary to Bauke. So Bauke doesn't matter what, he doesn't even notice if something is different, while Tom is involved in the whole team, and that costs him sometimes a little bit more energy, but that's also what I have to learn him. And Stephen, I always was with him. I never wrote for him as him being leader, because he wrote for me being leader sometimes, and when he was in the Giro, I wasn't there. So I know him as also like a real professional guy. That's the thing they have in common, all three of them. They are all super professional in their own way, but you see on the Tide, for example, we were there with both three of them in the hotel. It's also pretty funny. They get it together in the same hotel, and you see all three are so focused on the race and on this race. So I think the level of professionalism is for all three the same, but the attitude, Bauke is more on his own. Tom is more busy with the whole team, and I think Stephen is in the middle.
Interesting stuff there from Ten Dam. He obviously knows them all very well. And Bauke Mollema just sitting there in third place, looking very good, just as he was in the Tour de France last year, where he was second until very late. And he really went all in to try and get a place on the podium, and just came up short right at the end of the race, didn't he? And if he rides quieter and conservatively through this weekend and just rests and has a good rest day, he could be a factor as well, certainly for the podium. Perhaps doesn't have the explosivity to kind of go with Quintana and Nibali if they start attacking, particularly if it goes from a long way out.
Yeah, I think the one of the three who is not particularly happy with his position at the moment is Kruiswijk. I saw him at the finish today, and he looked a little bit tense. The race is not going the way he hoped it would go, but he's a guy who always improves in the third week, and except for last year, when he struggled on the last day.
Yeah, that was very unfortunate, wasn't it? Yeah, he was right on the limit, wasn't he? And he crashed into the snow wall, and his Giro undid. But he's probably paying the price for that crash, isn't he?
A couple of crashes, one in Yorkshire the week before the Giro, and one at the start of the Giro here. But I think he'll still come good. It's quite a couple of days for the GC guys, and they're going to be taking stock and formulating their plans for that brutally difficult last week, where it's all days where time is going to be gained and lost on general classification.
Well, tomorrow, Friday's stage could be more of the same. It's a lot shorter, fortunately, we won't be watching quite so much of two riders pedalling through the flat plains of Italy and before they're caught, and then there's a sprint. That's probably what's going to happen. Who knows? Maybe I'm completely wrong. I hate speculation, so maybe I've got that completely wrong. But we will assess stage 13 in tomorrow's episode. That's all we've got time for this evening, because we've got to go 3 kilometres to our hotel. This is fantastic.
Wonderful. Wonderful news, Lionel.
Don't forget to vote for Pedaleur de Charme. Your four options are Victor Campenaerts, Geraint Thomas, Adam Hansen, or Omar Frehley.
You can't vote for Pozzato. I know a lot of you will want to vote for Pozzato, but you can't yet. Not yet.
He's got to do something charming first. Anyway, thanks very much, Daniel.
Thanks, Lionel.
A reminder that you can watch the Giro d'Italia live and exclusive on Eurosport and Eurosport Player. UK viewers can also watch highlights of each stage at 10 p.m. on free-to-air channel Quest. There's a special offer for the Eurosport Player, £29.99 for an all-access pass for the rest of 2017. Details of availability, compatible devices and full terms and conditions can be found on the Eurosport Player website, uk.eurosportplayer.com. You've been listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with RAFA. Thanks to them, and thanks to our other sponsors, Science and Sport and Maserati, and to All Press Espresso for supporting our morning show, Kilometre Zero. The music in this episode is by Amara Terra. Thanks to them. Thanks to those who help keep us on the road, in particular David Luxon, Jonathan Rowe, Nick Christian, and Simon Gill. And thanks to Tom Wally, who produced this episode.